Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to Therapists Uncensored. Okay, guys, it's time. If you've been listening to the podcast, if you have found value, if you've shared it with anyone, if you believe that this is a good thing in the world to have this free education like this and this good content, then we are going to ask for your support now. And the support that we need is to pre-sell about 7,000 copies of our new book, Secure Relating, Holding Your Own in an Insecure World. And what that will do is it gives us a chance to hit some book lists. And if we hit the book list, then we're going to be able to spread this word about secure relating much more far and wide. So please, if you're thinking of getting it, go ahead and get it now. If you haven't checked it out, please do securerelatingbook.com. And if you've already purchased it, pre-ordered it, then please spread the word, buy it for your friends, send them to the site. Anything like that, it'll be word of mouth that will make this happen. And we would really, really appreciate your support now. SecureRelatingBook.com. Thanks.
When folks are feeling isolated in this field, I'm speaking to folks with marginalized community and they ask me, what do I do? How do I survive this? I say, go find your people. Find your people. And so that might be in your local community. Sometimes we connect virtually. And when we find each other, we find a sense of belonging and we are no longer alone. That empowers us to connect and to mobilize together.
Welcome to Therapist Uncensored. Building on decades of professional experience, this podcast tackles neurobiology, modern attachment, and more in an honest way that's helpful in healing humans. Your session begins now with Dr. Ann Kelly and Sue Marriott.
We are so pleased to bring you a very important conversation today. Today's episode, wow. Melody Lee is a queer, non-binary, colony-born migrant. They're the founder of Inclusive Therapist, a social justice, mental health directory, and community that centers the needs of marginalized communities, especially queer, trans, Black, Indigenous, and people of color. That's referred to as QT BIPOC. Their perspective is not just their own, so we encourage you to just notice how you feel as you're listening. This is part one of two episodes because it was such an important conversation. We wanted to really have time to sink into it, but just notice how you feel as you're listening, and remember that dealing with discomfort, dealing with our own kind of negative feelings as we're listening to something that is challenging, notice any desire to dismiss it or avoid the conversation. Being able to stay in uncomfortable states is part of secure relating. And Melody brings this incredible, generous voice, helping us all to learn how to liberate ourselves from harmful ideas that we hold that may continue to harm people that have been marginalized. So sit back. This is part one of two, and enjoy.
Great to be here with you, Sue. So my name is Melody Lee. And I use they and co pronouns. Co is a gender neutral pronoun from my native language. I'm a Hong Konger, many things, as we all are. I am a queer therapist of color. I'm a speaker and also mental health justice activist. I extend collective care and education focusing on decolonizing mental health care and healing racialized trauma. A little bit more about me personally, I describe myself as a colony-born migrant and a settler here on Turtle Island. So as a settler here, I advocate for land back, Indigenous sovereignty, and Black liberation as the priority. Professionally, you may know me in a couple spaces, such as Inclusive Therapist, which is a liberation-oriented mental health directory and community and resource hub, where we center on people with marginalized identities, and also Mental Health Liberation, which is our nonprofit that bridges Black, Indigenous, and people of color with free quality therapy. And we also empower clinicians and students of color.
Well, I have been watching your organization for some time, kind of stalking you all, you know, what are you lurking, watching, benefiting from it as far as just some of the education that you put out and supporting you all. I think you guys were the first people that we picked for some of our donations last year and then again this year, because we really, really believe in the mission. And actually, if you wouldn't mind, let's spend just a minute more talking about this, because I would really like some of our listeners to tune in to both elements of your organization, which I think is incredibly valuable. Now, with Inclusive Therapist, you said it's a directory. Can you say more about that? Like, first of all, do you have to be BIPOC to join the directory?
That's a great question. And thank you also for supporting our mission and our vision. And the listeners here are supporting us as well. So full of gratitude. Inclusive Therapist is a directory, resource hub, and community. While we center on the intersections of Black, Indigenous, and people of color, and the Two-Spirit LGBTQ+ intersections, QT BIPOC for short, we are a values-oriented community, less so an identity-oriented community. And so some of our values would be prioritizing land back, prioritizing Black liberation and reparations, prioritizing collective liberation, where we all play a role. And so for that reason, folks of any identity that are aligned with these values are welcome to join us. You're welcome to join us as a scholar member, which is free. So come learn with us, be in community with us. We share resources. And also, if you would like a profile on the directory, you're welcome to also go through our verification process. So that's something that is important to us, to maintain a safer space for people with marginalized identities to find a therapist. And then you can also start a profile. Yeah, and we will also connect you with folks that may reach out and say, you know, this might be my first time looking for therapy or seeking therapeutic care, or I've been burned the therapeutic relationships in the past. Now I'm giving therapy another try. So we also offer what I like to say, like a concierge service, to make people feel seen throughout the process of seeking therapeutic care.
That is just beautiful. And, you know, another thing that I really loved about what you all do is you support BIPOC therapists. Because it's not just about training us as cisgender white therapists to be more culturally sensitive and to unlearn some of our learning and to be able to reach out. You know, that's just not ever going to be enough versus supporting people of color, marginalized identities to be able to come up and be the direct providers of care. And I think that you guys are really, really great at that.
Thank you so much. Yes, BIPOC folks are who we center on. It's who our organization is led by, empowered by. So we also have professional CEU trainings that folks can attend. They're video trainings, and they're all led by BIPOC clinicians, providers, and that can share our lived experiences and also to push and expand this field in a liberation decolonial orientation.
And then separately, there's the fund. And you've mentioned that again. We typically have that in our show notes as and encourage people to go there. And is this also connected to the store with the t-shirts and things like that?
Yes, we have our shop. The designer is Joyce Cobway. She's a Black woman, a Congolese woman that does all of our beautiful designs. And so check us out. And a little bit about the fund, which, you know, the shop purchases help support. We are very proud of our BIPOC Therapy Fund, where we extend free therapy services, 12 free therapy sessions to BIPOC communities and applicants. by our very own community members, our BIPOC clinicians. And so we move away from the nonprofit industrial complex. It's not a top-down model. It's not a charity model. Rather, we co-create an ecosystem where folks in our community, we extend care back to our own community, and we cultivate and we foster care and growth as well. And that is connected to also our Liberatory Student Support Circle, where we are fostering future generations of BIPOC mental health activists and advocates. So this is all interconnected work. So if you support mental health liberation by visiting our website, mentalhealthliberation.org, you'll be able to see ways to receive care and also to support this work that we're doing.
You know, as you're talking, I literally have goosebumps because this is so exciting and for some of us so new, and just even shifting nonprofit complex and things like that. It has taken me a little while to learn kind of what some of that means. What's the problem with a nonprofit? You know, I thought nonprofits were a good thing and better than corporations. And so today's episode, I want to be able to walk people into that so that they understand. But you're so articulate and so good at this. What brought you to be so interested in this kind of liberation work? Can you say a little bit about your story?
My story starts with my people. So my people were Hong Kongers. For folks that might not know as much about Hong Kong, we were under British rule up until 1997. And so this is very recent. We've also been occupied by the Japanese. So liberation is in my blood. Our people have always resisted. We have always fought for autonomy, and we're currently continuing to do so as we are being actively suppressed by a great force. So please read up more on that. It's actually not even safe for me to talk about that on this podcast. And with that said, growing up in a colonized place, like many BIPOC folks have, recognizing colonialism and colonization is active right now on Turtle Island, where we're situated right now, is I was indoctrinated. I was indoctrinated by white supremacy delusion, by cis heteronormativity, you know, all these tenets of ableism, classism, capitalism, all of these tenets of colonialism and coloniality. Of course, I didn't have the language for that growing up. But what ends up happening is when we as people resisting colonization, we embody these tenets, then we get sick. We end up having distorted views of ourselves. We become mentally distressed. So this is in my body. And then I went through my education. I became a teacher for a while and then became interested in counseling. And then I started to pursue a career in counseling. And when I started grad school, I realized, wow, I am often the only queer person of color in this space, sometimes the only person of color in this space. The curriculum doesn't reflect me or my peers and my kin and my community stories, that these theories are obsolete. They center on, you know, the beliefs of white cis hetero men that do not have any idea or context about the lived experiences of anyone that is not in their bubble. And I was questioning, like, how do I move forward? And this is a question that so many BIPOC, QT BIPOC students that enter into the mental health field begin to ask themselves.
So you're indoctrinated and you go in. Did someone help you see what you weren't seeing, or was that just more an internal process?
So many of us come in and we have these embodied experiences. We've been indoctrinated and something begins to feel off. And this is my encouragement to other BIPOC and QT BIPOC students that are listening right now. If you are feeling off, if you're feeling isolated, you're not feeling seen or heard, or you feel gaslit, you are not the problem. The structure is the problem. It's designed that way. It's designed to keep us out. It's designed to keep us silent and to keep us small and to push us out. So I was like, what is going on? Am I the problem here? And really, it took community to reflect back and say, and to validate my experience, say, what you're going through is by design. There's nothing wrong with you. This is how these systems and these institutions are set up. And at that moment, I had a choice. I had a choice to say, I can conform to this institution. I can bend, I can contort myself by really severing from my humanity, or I can find my people and we can collectively do something different. And so with the encouragement of folks that have journeyed ahead of me, I'm grateful to have a supervisor that is social justice oriented, and she's a woman of color, to say, yes, you can do something different. And so it starts by community building. So when I emerged from grad school, one of the first communities that I found was Austin Therapists of Color. And, you know, we are still here and we are thriving. And from there, learning from one another, interrogating more of that indoctrination, reading on liberation psychology and reading about intersectionality, decolonization, and starting to make these connections with the mental health field started to give me language. And we are continuing to heal, learn, and grow in community together.
Yes, and teach us. I'm just so struck because I had no idea the Austin connection when I reached out. And this has happened to me now a couple of times, specifically with this work around liberation and really kind of trying to unlearn some of the things that I've learned. There's all these little tendrils that end up coming back to Austin.
When folks are feeling isolated in this field, I'm speaking to folks with marginalized community, and they ask me, what do I do? How do I survive this? I say, go find your people. Find your people. And so that might be in your local community. Sometimes we connect virtually, and when we find each other, we find a sense of belonging, and we are no longer alone. That empowers us to connect and to mobilize together. So I don't think Austin in itself is necessarily unique. However, I recognize that the active suppression and oppression in the state of Texas is severe. And I think there's an urgency there that we all need to pay attention to and to tend to and to resist and protest. However, this is all stolen land. And so we all need to come together wherever, you know, we're located.
You know, I'm going to confess something just as part of how this happens, right? I have been in Austin this entire time, and I've been very connected in the therapy world, and just recently have been learning about all of these sub-communities that I thought that I knew people and knew, you know what I mean, was connected. And so it's very embarrassing and eye-opening how much of a separation that has been that I wasn't aware of. And I know that that's going to be true for so many other people. So if you're sitting there, also if you're listening and you are in a more privileged position and you're thinking, oh no, we don't have sub-communities here, I challenge you about that. And part of the problem is that we, just what you were saying, is we keep people out. So it's not a coincidence. This part is not a coincidence that I wouldn't have heard about it or known about it. You know, I also was indoctrinated and participating in keeping people out by not going and finding out. So yeah, not to just assume, not just to look up and around your neighborhood and look up and around your conferences and say, you know, there's nobody here, that's not the answer by any stretch.
Absolutely, Sue. Thank you for your confession. And I sit with even the terminology like sub-community or subgroups, because Black, Indigenous of people and people of color are the global majority. And being the global majority, why is it that this field continues to center on white voices? Who is writing our textbook? Who is writing our licensure exams? Who's teaching these things? Whose stories are we centering? And so that is the challenge. It's the perspective shift that I encourage folks to start reckoning with. This field is disproportionately white, cis-hetero, middle class. And if I'm just very frank, it's wealthy white women that dominate this field. Why is that? How did this come to be? And what are the structures in place to uplift wealthy white cishet women and also simultaneously pose barriers for people without those structural privileges to keep us out? And so this directly impacts client care. There are many marginalized communities that simply do not have access to or also do not feel safe to reach out for mental health care. And then our communities are told it's our fault that we don't seek mental health care when this system is designed to keep us sick.
And even the notion of minority when it's actually majority. When we were writing our book, Secure Relating, even that original research in the attachment world, you know, there's all this argument that no, you know, the original research was in Uganda and there's been all of this cross-cultural research and it's a universal theory because it's based on biology and all of those things. Now I can articulate more about what the problem is with the theory and how that the even the instruments themselves are embedded with these patriarchal notions of what sensitive parenting even looks like when, you know, that acronym WEIRD, Western, Educated, Industrial, Rich, Democratic, that I think, I can't remember the exact statistic, but the percentage of undergraduate students and research. So typically when you study, you're studying your own, the people that are in these institutions, but it makes up like something like 5% of the rest of the population. And then we define things from that and then apply it to the rest of the world. So I think I'm adding or hopefully joining you around this notion of the minority centering ourselves, projecting that out and assuming that that's the norm.
Yes. And that's why language really matters. I'm going to invite folks to shift from minority to minoritized. This is something that's been done to us. We have been minoritized by design. And Sue, what you're describing is colonialism. It is coloniality, which is the occupation, exploitation, cultural domination that impacts land, thought, behavior, and life. And in our field, creating these so-called norms according to the dominating forces. And then also pathologizing the minoritized people. And the gross part is you also named the exploitation to take our models of care, extract, and to coin it, to take ownership of it, and then sell it back to us. So this is what coloniality looks like. You just summarized it well.
Well, that's great, because I did want to get into more of that about decolonializing mental health care. So I wanted to break that down a little bit more. And so, yeah, I'm glad we're right now in the middle of it. So what does that exactly mean to decolonize mental health care?
This is a question that I'm going to invite us all to think about, because what that means to us depends on our positionality. Because depending on positionality, our responsibilities are different. And also our relationship to the land that we're on and our responsibility and relationship to one another. So first I want to lift up Dr. Jennifer Mullen, who just published a powerful book, Decolonizing Therapy. And she's a dear friend and also somebody that I look to as a teacher that has been just pouring her heart into decolonizing mental health care. And there is no one answer. I think where it begins is for us to first understand what coloniality is, what the coloniality of power is, and all the ways that that can look. So, you know, that's the monopolizing power through Euro or American-centric knowledge, epistemology, ontology, which is beinghood or reality, the monopolizing power of ideology or beliefs, and also methodology, how we come up with these frameworks and study. And when we understand how that is just infiltrated the foundation of the mental health field, then we can start to critique. But I think, you know, if I were to move away from the more academic view of decolonizing mental health care, I believe it starts with our relationships. It starts with our relationship with land. Whose land are we on? How are we relating to this land? Are we exploiting? Are we extracting? Or are we demanding, fighting to return this land back to indigenous peoples? So there is no decolonization without land back. No decolonization without land back. Decolonization has now also been co-opted and whitewashed. So if we're not fighting for the land back, it's not decolonization. It is also recognizing our relationship to this empire that is built upon by exploited labor of enslaved Africans. And what is our relationship to that? So there is no decolonization if we're not uplifting Black liberations, and that's reparations now. And so before we even get far-fetched about how this intersects with the mental health field, we first need to get right in our relationship and also our relationship with water, our relationship with other than humans, with animals, with vegetation, with plants. How are we tending to one another? Are we just grabbing, exploiting, capitalizing upon? So it does start with internal work, but this work has to be in relationship and in community.
This is hard work. And you're being extremely generous to walk us through this. And you certainly don't have to do that. That's our job, you know, to do these things. But I just want to acknowledge that by being able to go slow and kind of walk us through this, it really is a gift. And it's not something that we should expect to be carried. And yeah, I want everybody to be aware of that. And also to hold everybody accountable for these are big concepts and they can be hard. And it's probably not one conversation that you're going to get it. It certainly hasn't been for me. It's been a process. And I'm a baby in the process. But, you know, I can't keep sitting at your feet saying, you know, feed me. And I'm aware of that. So I was just feeling this gratitude of like, and feeling the work of it.
Thank you for naming that. And I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing this for our collective liberation. And so I will lend my voice however I can. And I also learn from many, many, many teachers. So y'all go on our website, inclusivetherapist.com/resources. We have an entire resource library on decoloniality, on liberation. And those are some places to get started, to just start reading, getting familiar, and then read with folks, talk about it, dialogue about it, because decoloniality cannot happen in isolation. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. Something I appreciate you for saying, Sue, is about accountability. I have a community of people that holds me accountable, and I mess up often, and I have to be quick to own that and recognize my community is gonna hold me accountable. And in the same way, from a place of care, from a place of love, I am just holding up a mirror to this mental health field and say, what are we doing? And why are we perpetuating what people with marginalized identities, especially Black and Indigenous folks, are telling us? This is harmful. How are we holding one another accountable? And let's start learning and unlearning together.
And it's our job also to do the work to be able to not project our own shame, you know, when we get corrected, to be able to be grateful for it, you know, to go from there. I thought it might be helpful so that it's bringing it back from the academic, like just a small example of one of those things where I had an aha, because I thought it might connect with some folks. I had noticed, for example, in the psychoanalytic world, that, you know, it used to be only physicians that could become psychoanalysts. And then it was psychologists. And I'm a social worker. I have a lot of training in analysis and in psychoanalytic therapy. So I could feel that particular barrier. And I did not like it. And it felt, you know what I mean? It was just a particular moment where that I could feel the literal, I'm not allowed in that club because I don't have the right credentials. Well, then by extension, there are healers. In order to get the letters behind my name, I had to go through an institution that is part of this colonialism that you're talking about, part of the state. So it's only people that have the resources and have end up going through this particular small buttonhole that get the letters that then are legitimized to provide the care. And that leaves out all of these forms of healing and care that are community-based, this history of Indigenous care, and you're talking about the land, these connections to the land. Right now, the delivery is individual therapy inside an office where that even if I am thinking more collectively and systematically, just the nature of therapy, it's going to end up focusing on centering the problem on the person that's in therapy and their depression and their whatever it is, just almost by the very nature of typical mental health care delivery, individual therapy, that is so expensive that it is extremely hard to access. So those were like little things that were more concrete around like, oh, that's how we exclude. Like there's literal exclusions. But when you're in the stream, you're not aware that you're excluding, at least consciously. You're just thinking, we're all therapists. These people are not therapists.
Yes, appreciate you for naming the hierarchy. This field is extremely hierarchical, and let alone the barriers to keep us out and getting those letters, but also even from an interdisciplinary perspective, certain credentials or, you know, are more valuable than others. When the reality is, it's the lived experience, our connection to our ancestral wisdoms, the cultural wisdoms that people of global majority, people of global South embody, that from an anti-capitalistic perspective, highly valuable. And it is why these are the exact same models of healing that are being co-opted. You know, I'm thinking about, sure, attachment, you mentioned that, somatic healing, for example, and all, you know, different modalities where it's just stealing, and then saying, I'm going to put a trademark on that and it's ours now. So the hierarchy has to be dismantled. We need to reckon with power. The field holds a lot of power, but people in positions of power, the highest positions of power, are the most complicit, oftentimes, with upholding and perpetuating coloniality. And how are they being held accountable?
I'm just even thinking of the training institutions, even after you get your license, there's training institutions that really are kind of sales funnels, going back to capitalism. And so another question I had is like, again, just going back to some of the basics, like there's all these terms thrown around, like diversity, representation, equity, DEI, that's a whole thing now, anti-oppression, you know, those things all kind of mean something a little bit different, and different people are working, you know, or kind of their passions are lit up by some of these different things. Can you just take us through what the differences are in those different ideas?
I'm happy to. And I'm making some connections back to our previous point about the people in positions of power that hold the most power. So folks that are doing the trainings and have these modalities, these therapeutic models under their names. If we pay attention, I'm curious about how many of these big names have proclaimed an anti-genocidal stance. And I'm not going to name names specifically, but let's look, right? If you are trained under a certain modality, EFT, AEDP, you know, all those letters, has the leader in that spoken up against the ongoing genocides that are happening?
So can you say more about the why genocide in particular, that would be the test?
So back to what you're asking about these terminologies that we throw around, you know, anti-racist, anti-oppressive. There is nothing more racist than genocide. And I didn't come up with this. I learned this in community. Somebody else said it. I'm like, you're right. There's nothing more oppressive and racist than genocide. So how dare we claim labels such as anti-racist, equity, social justice, even anti-oppression, when we can't do the bare minimum, which is to condemn genocide. And so this mental health field right now is very quiet around the genocides that are happening in Palestine, in Gaza, in Congo, in Sudan, in Tigray. And our silence, firstly, is a stance. Silence is not inaction. Silence is a stance. And secondly, silence is absolutely complicity. And so we as a field are doing harm by one, failing to acknowledge genocides that are happening, and second, being complicit, perpetuating the erasure, the neglect of the psychological warfare that is happening right now.
Based on ethnicity, based on your culture.
This is ethnic cleansing. It's apartheid. It's racism in its most violent manifestation. And how dare we as a field claim to be so-called healers if we are not pouring everything that we can into stopping these genocides? What are we healing? We need to put all of our efforts, all of our collective efforts into stopping the perpetuation of not only harm, but the intergenerational trauma, the racialized trauma that is happening right now. Palestine will be free. I just gotta say that. Palestine will be free. The mental health field will have nothing to do with Palestinian liberation because we have been complicit for so long, but Palestine will be free.
So part of then the notion of it, that being different than diversity or different than anti-oppression or different than just representation in general, what matters the most is where harm is happening.
Time is of the essence. There is great urgency right now. There isn't actually time to sit with our discomfort. There isn't time to read another book. The mass killing and murder that is happening every second that this continues, the intentional starvation, the intentional bringing down hospitals and infrastructures of care, all of this is deliberate and it's highly time sensitive. And I'm angry at the mental health field because we are continuing to operate in this intellectual space of saying, well, we need to analyze this and we need to read more. There is no time. And so the focus always has to be the people that are most urgently, most systemically oppressed. And there is no more urgency that's higher than stopping the genocides that are happening. And there is no time for debate right now. We are not healers. We can't claim to be therapists if stopping a genocide is not our top priority.
And when you say our top priority, what might that look like? Like, what would be the call to action?
Firstly, center on people that are being impacted. Follow their lead, follow their voices. Follow the activists on the ground, Palestinian activists, Palestinian press, Congolese activists, folks from Sudan. Listen to them, believe them. They will tell us what they need. So if they are needing resources or aid, do that. If they are needing amplification, do that. If they are wanting us to protest and resist and to call for ceasefire and to put pressure on the complicit politicians, do that. I'm not the one that is leading this. I'm a follower of the people that are experiencing this harm. So I think the first thing is be really clear about whose voices that we're centering, because there are a lot of distracting voices out there right now. And part of anti-oppressive work is to center on people that are most marginalized, which are the people that are resisting, enduring these genocides right now.
You're right. There is a lot of noise and a lot of voices out there. We are going to continue. We're going to take a pause here. We're going to do a part two. The show notes are going to be full of other action items. We're going to come right back at you, and we're going to continue this passionate, important, urgent conversation. Thank you for listening, and we're going to see you around the bend.
Therapist Uncensored is Ann Kelly and Sue Marriott. This podcast is edited by Jack Anderson.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.